Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. My name is Em, and today I'll be speaking with our policy manager, Anna, as well as two brilliant campaigners who have been working with us on securing a secondary breast cancer audit. The first campaigner we'll be speaking to is Claire, who has been living with secondary breast cancer since 2015. Then we'll be talking with Jen, who was diagnosed with secondary breast cancer in 2017. Both women have been instrumental in our work over the past few years, and we wanted to share our progress with you today. Claire and Anna, thank you very much for joining me. Anna, I think it's best if you start off by explaining exactly what a secondary breast cancer audit is and what that will entail and why we're so invested in making it happen.
Absolutely. So for the past 15 years, Breast Cancer Now and its legacy charities, along with our amazing supporters, have been campaigning for improved data collection on secondary breast cancer. So it's been estimated there are around 35,000 people with secondary breast cancer in the UK, but we don't have accurate or up-to-date figures. We also don't have data on what treatment and care these patients are receiving or their outcomes. And as a consequence, any progress, for instance, to plan for services to meet the needs of these patients or to improve their care or treatment has been hampered by this lack of data. So specifically in England, it's been mandatory for hospital trusts to collect data on diagnoses of metastatic breast cancer or secondary breast cancer since 2013. However, our secondary, not second rate report, which was published in 2016 by one of the legacy charities, showed that two-thirds of hospital trusts in England weren't collecting full data. Later on, our 2019 report highlighted the continued inaction in relation to secondary breast cancer data collection. And our argument was really about the vital importance of ensuring effective design and provision of care, and really needed this data to be included. So therefore, we decided that we were calling for a secondary breast cancer audit to ensure that we gain this missing insight and the information to ensure that we really understood the needs and experiences and outcomes of secondary breast cancer patients, so their care and treatment could be really informed by data. So after a range of engagement with NHS England, ministers, parliamentarians, in May 2021, NHS England announced that they would be doing a secondary breast cancer audit. And in October 2021, the Welsh Government also agreed that they join this audit as well.
Claire, as someone who has secondary breast cancer, I can kind of see that I can see as Anna was talking, there was sort of some frustration for you there, obviously. And I would like to know, just from your perspective, how would patients benefit from having this audit, and what would that audit mean for you personally as someone living with secondary breast cancer?
I guess I'd like to start by trying to answer that question by saying that I find that most people just don't understand what secondary breast cancer is and what it means. They don't understand that it's treatable but not curable, and the prognosis is still not great in this country beyond a few years. And the perception is that breast cancer in the UK, at least, is largely fixed. But ironically, much of this lack of public understanding and awareness is due to the media coverage about huge advances in understanding and treating cancer. And there's been a lot of commentary on a golden age of treatment following breakthrough studies into new immunotherapy drugs, for example, and almost giving the impression that if we just all pull together as a society and focus on prevention, living healthily, and early detection through screening, if we do all of that, then we can make deaths from breast cancer a thing of the past. But I'm afraid for secondary breast cancer patients like me, that simply isn't true. There isn't any getting better. There's no happy ending. People living with secondary breast cancer don't have the time to wait for long overdue improvements in services to be made, especially access to specialist nurses with experience in working with and supporting patients with metastatic breast cancer. And I think the audit is absolutely key to all of this, because we do a wonderful job of counting the dead. But I don't think we do anywhere near enough of counting the living and then planning services and support around that, and also new drug treatments and investment. My background is before I was forced to retire with breast cancer, I was in business, and you could get investment for pretty much anything if you had a good business case. And a business case for all things, services, clinical trials, support, etc., is based around understanding the true numbers. And for me, that's what the audit is really about. You know, anecdotally, through this campaigning, I've heard of a department in one hospital group where the consultants all got together and decided to do their own audits just of secondary breast cancer patients. And they literally sat down and went through all the files and added up the numbers of secondary breast cancer patients that they had in their hospital trust. What they found from doing that really, really shocked them, and that they had twice as many breast cancer patients that they were treating with secondary breast cancer than they thought they had. And they then used that data, because it was a complete no-brainer. They used that data to take straight to the hospital trust and make a case for a second specialist cancer nurse who was trained and had skills and experience with working with secondary breast cancer patients. If data on diagnosis and treatment of secondary breast cancer isn't being routinely collected by hospitals, by commissioners, by healthcare providers, it means that we're not able to identify local patient population needs and then plan services effectively to meet them. It's not complicated, this. It's really basic, actually. But I think about the number of friends and campaigners who joined me or I worked with over the years since 2015 to campaign for this. I think I'm the only person left since 2015. So that's 7 years, and every single person that joined that campaign has now died from secondary breast cancer. And so, you know, that's very real for me. It's absolutely essential that we complete this audit comprehensively, but quickly, and then start to use the data in a very straightforward way to inform conversations about where the investment needs to go to provide support for patients like me. Because it's just simply not good enough that I'm likely to become a statistic of the number of people who've died from secondary breast cancer rather than the number of people who are living with it. After all of this campaigning, I've always said, do not let perfect be the enemy of good. And I've said several times that compassion on this without any action is actually just simply observation and is just frankly not really of huge value. So I'm sorry if that appears quite hard-hitting in the way I'm saying it, but I don't think it's particularly complex. This doesn't need to be, and we just need to get on with it. We need to collect that data and then start using it.
Thank you so much, Claire. There was some really powerful points that you made there. And I am just, I'm amazed that you can say this in such a calm and measured way, because I can only imagine the anger and the frustration that you have and have had over the years of continually trying to enforce change. And it kind of seems to be very slow going. I wonder, Anna, can you kind of add on to that a little bit and perhaps give some insight as to perhaps why things are taking so long?
Yeah, absolutely. Where we are at the moment is that NHS England, HGRIP and the Welsh Government are currently commissioning the National Cancer Audit Collaborating Centre, which will not only deliver the secondary breast cancer audit, but will deliver a number of other cancer audits, which were also announced at the same time as the secondary breast cancer audit back in May 2021. That current commissioning process is ongoing, and we expect the audit to start in autumn 2022. So obviously for us as Breast Cancer Now, we're really interested in exploring kind of what work can be done prior to that audit. So one of our key priorities is ensuring there is improved data collection in advance of the audit, because essentially the audit is a mechanism to utilize that insight of the data that's already coming through. So what we want to see is improved data collection ahead of that audit. So we've been speaking to stakeholders to really understand what needs to be put in place to ensure that that insight is being gathered at a trust level. I think secondary to that, we also really want to understand what really matters to patients about what should be included in the secondary breast cancer audit. Obviously, we did some work in terms of listening to patients as part of our broader campaign piece, but we really want to understand what matters to patients in terms of how the audit is delivered, in terms of the mechanisms in which that insight is gathered, but then also the outputs as well. So that's some work that Breast Cancer Now will be doing in advance of the audit starting in autumn 2022 to influence key stakeholders about what the audit should look like. But we're really keen to ensure that the audit fully embeds the kind of insights of patients and people with lived experience along with their friends and family to ensure that the audit isn't just some kind of separate silo data collection and insight piece, but really is embedded in the treatment of care in secondary breast cancer patients.
One of the main things that I'm getting from Claire is that, you know, so much work that she personally has put in and, you know, so many other campaigners have put in, it seems like it's building towards something, but there's no idea of when that's actually going to come to fruition. So it would be, yeah, great if you could give us an idea of what we can expect to see. Like I say, hopefully in the near future.
So when the audit commences, then they'll be scoping about what the scope of the audit looks like. So this will be led by the commission provider, NHS England, Welsh Government, HQIP, and other individuals and organisations involved in the audit. To give a comparison, the NABCOP audit, which is the current breast cancer audit for older people, looks at a degree of specific data sets. So for instance, access to surgery, access to chemo, and then alongside that then looks at kind of different breakdowns within that as well, looking at different types of breast cancer patients. One of the things we're looking to influence is the scope of the secondary breast cancer audit. And that's something that we feel really strongly should be influenced by patient and friends and family's views, because obviously they know what insight will really impact their care the most. Secondary to that, obviously there'll be some work that will kind of explore kind of how the secondary breast cancer audit functions in terms of governance, but alongside that also then kind of what the specific outputs are. So for instance, traditionally a audit will have a annual report. However, it may be that actually there's better ways that audit can share that insight to ensure that it's as dynamic as possible. So we're really interested to see kind of what influence that we can have in terms of shaping the audit so it best meets the needs of patients and people with lived experience.
And so that's the immediate next steps of what's going to take place.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. And any idea on how long that stage will take?
So that takes within the first year of the audit. So we expect kind of the first kind of audit stage to take place in 2023.
Claire, is there anything that you wanted to comment on from what Anna's just said?
Yeah, I think it's extremely important that we make sure that this audit is specific in measuring data and analysing data that's specifically relevant to secondary breast cancer. So, you know, we need to understand how many people are out there living with secondary breast cancer, how they were diagnosed, at what stage they were diagnosed, how does the breast cancer instance divide down by type, because there are various subtypes, what treatments are people accessing by geography, etc., etc. And then we need to also understand in detail what support is available to people across the spectrum of their needs. So everything from clinical nurse specialists through to palliative support, counselling, financial support, all the things that you would imagine are necessary when you are living with a life-limiting disease. For it to be useful, it needs to be specific to secondary breast cancer. But I would also say on the timings of it, it is clear that this is going to take quite a long time to do. So given that, you know, unfortunately, the prognosis and life expectancy for secondary breast cancer patients, although it's improving, is still a life-limiting disease. To date, there just has not been a clear idea of how the data is going to be collected at source in hospitals. You know, so it's the age-old thing, isn't it? If you haven't identified who is it that's actually going to capture this data, where are they going to put it? You know, what format is it going to be in? You know, a good design for collecting data still doesn't mean anything if there's no resource put into actually collecting it and understanding it in a proper format. There are a lot of challenges with this. It's not they're not insurmountable at all, but it needs to be done properly by people who know what they're doing. Otherwise, the idea that we would do this and then it would be a waste of time because the output from it is actually unusable is even worse than if we didn't do it at all, to be honest with you. Yeah. I would also encourage that we use this data to ensure and inform planning for future treatment development as well as support, because I have to acknowledge that, you know, it may not come in time to support, to help people like me, but there is absolutely, I'm determined that it should come in a timely fashion to help people who come after me. The ultimate goal of this is to use the data that we collect for a brighter future.
Again, some absolutely excellent points there, Claire. Anna, did you want to say anything to that?
Yeah, so I totally agree with Claire. We really want this audit to be something that isn't just a siloed separate piece, and that it's also really thought through about how the audit can be kind of embedded, not in terms of also just in terms of collecting the data, but then also kind of the insight that comes from the audit. In terms of the kind of mechanism which will be used to collect the data, so our understanding is that the National Cancer Registration Analysis Service, so NCRAS, will be the mechanism in which the data is collected. So that's the organisation that holds all of the data already. So that's the reason why we're undertaking influencing activities. So there's improved data collection. It's already happening in advance of the audit. But I agree very much with what Claire's saying in terms of we need to get that part of the kind of pathway right first. So then when that data gets to the audit, they then are able to then use it properly and get that true insight rather than using data that may not be, which may be incomplete.
Yeah, because the last thing we want is for the audit to come up with a conclusion, which is, you know, we've discovered X, Y, and Z, but we are unable to conclude in this area because actually we there's no data that to inform, you know, or the data set that we've collected is not you know, statistically significant enough, etc. You know, we really have to avoid that happening because we've clearly got an opportunity now to make sure that the data collection is as good as it possibly can be, ready to then be audited.
Absolutely. So and so for us, I think it's that combined thing of improved data collection and the audit. And I think they're hopefully mutually reinforcing because obviously an audit is a really great opportunity for trusts to improve their data collection. So I think it's very much, we're focused obviously in campaigning, ensuring the audits kind of it's able to produce what we want it to produce. But alongside that, we're not taking the pedal off that data collection aspect as well.
Thank you very much, Anna, for sort of clarifying those points. I suppose the last thing that I'd like to ask of both of you, and I want to sort of just say before I ask this, that I do not believe that the onus, and nor do I think that anyone at Breast Cancer Now thinks that the onus should be on secondary breast cancer patients themselves to have to do this. But how do we think we can get more supporters, listeners of the podcast, people affected by breast cancer? How can people get involved? What can we do to sort of make the government actually aware of how urgent this is? Claire, this for you, there's maybe more of a kind of opinion side of things. What sort of things do you think that we can do to get involved?
There's a sort of range of a range of things that you can do. I think generally remaining informed about this and the progress on it. Make sure that you are signed up to follow what's going on with the Breast Cancer Now work. And then if you see a call to action coming from Breast Cancer Now, for example, you know, writing to your MP or responding to a questionnaire or a survey or something, then doing what you can to respond to that, perhaps personally, or perhaps forwarding on to others and encouraging them to do it, etc. So engaging as you see fit. Your time and also your emotional energy around this will ebb and flow quite naturally. So I would also say don't beat yourself up over it either, but keeping a watching eye on it via Breast Cancer Now, but letting Breast Cancer Now also coordinate, I think I would strongly advise. I've actually developed quite a sort of relationship with my MP over this. He's very aware of this issue, and I do keep him informed. I'm quite professional in the way that I do it. You know, I write him a line, I drop him a line or whatever, but I do keep him informed, and he does me or gives me the respect of responding and following up. And I would encourage others to do that if they feel that that's something that they would like to do, because it means that if you've got that kind of connection with somebody, then if there is a call to action, if there's a debate that's going on in Parliament or some reference to this through a select committee or something comes up in the press, you can also then call on your MP and relate that back. So I found that really quite useful. And then also, I think just asking questions, perhaps if you're interested in this area, when you go for treatment, just understanding what's actually happening in your own trust. Are they collecting the data? Some are, and some are doing an amazing job. Others would have no clue, just don't have the position filled, are not collecting anything, don't know. Having some understanding of what's going on in your local trust is quite useful, because you can also then feedback anything that you learn from that back to Breast Cancer Now, directly, and potentially then feed that all back into the overall campaign and the quality of the audit. That's what I'm going to carry on doing. I'm not going to give up. That's why I'm doing this podcast. And we just need to keep the message alive that it is really important to live well with this disease, and also to keep investing in resources to support everyone to live well with it, and also to influence as much as possible in a positive way where the investment is going into the future, and to researching new treatments and consign breast cancer and deaths from breast cancer to history. That's really what it's about. I'm not going to give up. I'm going to carry on living well and supporting this campaign.
I'm very glad to hear it. I'm sure Breast Cancer Now is absolutely thrilled to have someone like you on board. Well, who is so passionate about this. And Anna, I suppose, I mean, obviously, everything that Claire's just mentioned is absolutely fantastic. And as she says, you know, people that do have the energy for it, have the capacity for it, though it may ebb and flow, you know, get involved if and when you can. But from our side of things, or perhaps anything that Claire hasn't mentioned, how else can we do our bit to make sure that this audit actually is recognised and does actually get underway as we hope?
Yeah, just to reaffirm what Claire said, I think it's so important for patients to highlight how important data is. I think it can often seem like data is not something that particularly data collection would generally impact on patients, but actually, obviously, all of our work has demonstrated how important data is. And I think patients and people with lived experience can really bring to life the challenges of not having that data and how it can make you as a patient feel, but also how it can impact your care. So yeah, just to reiterate what kind of Claire said, it's really important that we get that patient perspective involved in all of our work, but especially around things like data collection, where it can seem quite abstract. More generally, so as I mentioned previously, we're going to be doing a lot of engagement over the next couple of months in advance of the audit starting, for us to really kind of identify for patients what exactly they would really like in the audit, and how they think the audit should be developed, structured and delivered to ensure that their needs are placed at the heart of that. So that will inform our positioning, which we'll use to influence decision makers within the audit, such as the Commission Provider, NHS England, Welsh Government and HQIP, and other organisations and clinicians involved in the audit. Alongside that, we're also engaging in terms of the government's development of its new cancer plan. So unfortunately, the consultation will have closed by the time that this podcast goes out. But part of our work will be really kind of advocating for the delivery of the secondary breast cancer audit as part of our campaign in relation to the new cancer plan. And hopefully when that's published, we'll be able to talk a bit more about the audit as well. Any conversations patients or supporters want to have at the local level, I think will be always really valuable in just in terms of sharing with us that insight that's coming through. And I guess lastly, as Claire said again, we'll keep you all updated about how our campaign's developing and what our next steps are. So if those who aren't already kind of signed up to our various newsletters or following us on Twitter, please do, because that will be the best way to kind of get involved when we've got a clear call to action about how we want patient and supporter insight to inform our next steps.
Thank you for that. So thank you so much for giving us your time. It has been really, really lovely talking to you.
Thank you too. Thank you.
Now we've heard from Claire and our work in England, we'll be speaking to Jen about the audit in Scotland. Jen and Anna, thank you for joining me.
Hello.
Hi, I'm lovely to be here.
So, Anna, as we covered a little bit earlier, we already know that England and Wales will commence a secondary breast cancer audit in autumn 2022. But what about Scotland and Northern Ireland?
So I'll start off with Northern Ireland first. So the Department of Health in Northern Ireland over the last couple of years has been developing a cancer strategy, which Breast Cancer Now, supporters and individuals with lived experience of secondary breast cancer have fed into. So we saw a draft version of this cancer strategy at the end of last year, and as part of it, it outlined plans which would enable Northern Ireland to improve not only data collection but potentially also undertake audits in secondary breast cancer. So part of this included, for instance, an establishment of a regulatory and legislative framework to allow secondary use of cancer care data, broader engagement with stakeholders to understand how best to use this data, the establishment of a cancer data coordination function, and a formal review of the Northern Ireland Cancer Registry's role and responsibilities to potentially expand their remit. As part of this, as part of our response to the cancer strategy consultation, we also called for the Northern Ireland government to commit to a secondary breast cancer audit, in addition to all of those things I've just listed above. We're still waiting on the publication of this strategy to really understand kind of to what degree there's been a commitment to take forward these proposals. And so as a consequence, we'll be looking at kind of what the strategy contains to really understand our next steps as Breast Cancer Now. In the meantime, we've been trying to engage the Health Minister in Northern Ireland as well, just to really, really highlight the impact a secondary breast cancer audit would have for patients in Northern Ireland. In terms of Scotland, the picture is slightly different. So we've undertaken work over the years to really understand what data collection looks like in Scotland. And we've really identified the fact that, again, similar to England, and well, actually slightly different to England and Wales, data collection on secondary breast cancer isn't mandatory. And actually, if you were to find out a bit more about detail about secondary breast cancer, you'd have to request that data. And what would happen is that then different metrics would have to be put together to identify the kind of experiences of secondary breast cancer patients. So over the years, we've requested this data, which has given us kind of a rough idea of about how many people experience secondary breast cancer in Scotland. And we've also looked at the data at kind of a local level as well. And unfortunately, when we asked local health boards for information on this data, not all of them were able to provide us with data, about a third weren't able to. So we know that that data isn't fully available at a national or local level. So we've been, alongside the work that we've been doing in England and Wales, we've also been campaigning in Scotland for improved data collection. So fortunately, in 2020, as part of the Scottish Government's Beating Cancer Ambition in Action update, we were able to secure a commitment for improved secondary breast cancer data collection, which was really fantastic. However, unfortunately, this document was kind of superseded in December 2020 with a document called Recovery and Redesign Cancer Services Action Plan, which was really a response to COVID-19 and the pressure on cancer services. And unfortunately, as that document superseded the last one, it meant that those previous commitments weren't kind of continued to be committed to, and there was no additional requirements around improved data collection for secondary breast cancer. So in Scotland specifically, we've been working to push for a secondary breast cancer audit still. So we've been working with passionate campaigners such as Jen to build political support. So we've undertaken a webinar for MSPs. We've also supported a parliamentary motion in the Scottish Parliament, which received over 25 signatures from members of the Scottish Parliament. And we presented issues around secondary breast cancer data collection and an audit more generally at the Scottish Parliament's cross-party group for cancer. And we've also met with the Scottish Government's policy team.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for that overview. It sounds there that there's sort of been at some places a little bit two steps forward, one step back type thing in places, but there is movement going on, which is really reassuring. And Jen, I wonder if I could turn to you now and just say, obviously you are someone who is living with secondary breast cancer and you are based in Scotland. So from your perspective, how would secondary breast cancer patients benefit from an audit, and what would it mean to you personally to see this going through?
So I'll respond to that by starting to say I am so very lucky to live in Edinburgh and be treated at the Western General Hospital and have access to a dedicated secondary breast cancer nurse and have the best care and support that I think I can get. Unfortunately, that is not the same over the length and breadth of Scotland. I know many patients who don't have a secondary breast cancer nurse, who don't have access to the right support and the right care. And so we need to implement change. We need change in Scotland. We need every single person who is living with secondary breast cancer to be counted. And the reason we need them to be counted is so that we can plan services and support based on evidence. So one of the things when I was doing my research for this, I noted on the Public Health Scotland website how we share data and intelligence. And there are three key things. We use and share the best available knowledge, data and intelligence to protect and improve the health of the population of Scotland. We use data and intelligence in our own work to ensure that what we do and how we do it is firmly rooted in the evidence. And we share actionable, accessible evidence so that decision makers, planners and practitioners across the country can take informed action. And what I don't understand is why we're not doing that for secondary breast cancer. We need to be counted so that we can improve the health of the population that are living with secondary breast cancer. We need to ensure that any changes that are made are rooted in evidence. So we might be counted because hopefully we will get this passed. People will listen to us and they will start counting us. And we might be surprised. We might go, oh, there's a few less than we thought, but I actually think it will be the other way. I think there's a lot of people currently living with secondary breast cancer that are not being counted, and that's why we don't have the services. It shouldn't be a postcode lottery. It should be the same services available across the country, and it's not. So if we can evidence that there are, for example, we have a lot of people in Edinburgh living with secondary breast cancer, we might have a lot of people in Aberdeen, but we don't know. Does Aberdeen have the same services as Edinburgh? So everything we do and everything that I've always been kind of taught working and growing up and becoming an adult is you have to have evidence for any change you make. You don't just go willy-nilly and make change. So let's get the evidence. Let's show how many people are living with this disease. The way it's going to change for me personally is I kind of feel a bit hurt. And I know that's a strange thing to say, but I'm hurt. Why are you not counting me? Why am I being kind of shoved to the bottom of the pile? And you have done so much work, breast cancer now, with us and with other campaigners to try and get us counted. Why am I not important? Is it because my average lifespan is 2 to 3 years? Is it because we're secondary and we're only counting people with primary breast cancer? It does feel very hurtful, and I don't understand why we're not being counted.
Mm-hmm. I think that's an absolutely valid point that you make. It is, you know, it's only natural to feel very overlooked.
Mm-hmm. Good word, overlooked, yeah.
Yeah, we very much are. I think that's quite an unbiased opinion to take. It's just kind of factual that this isn't happening and it should be happening. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's not just the action of being counted, as we went into earlier, as Anna explained when we were speaking with Claire. It's not just the act of sort of taking those statistics, it's then learning from those statistics and taking actions based on those.
Absolutely.
Because as you say, it's a bit of a postcode lottery at the moment. And though you are fortunate enough to have access to a secondary breast care nurse, not a lot of people are. Yeah. And we don't know if they are or not. And that's obviously a huge problem. And I mean, despite actually having quite a good level of care where you are, you've still made the effort to kind of campaign with Breast Cancer Now for other people to get a higher level of care and to hopefully get this audit going through. Could you perhaps talk a little bit about what sorts of things you've been involved with?
So my relationship with Breast Cancer Now started at the very beginning, and when I was diagnosed in 2017 de novo straight with breast cancer, secondary breast cancer, and I was offered a drug called Perjeta, but it wasn't available in the NHS in Scotland. So I campaigned with Breast Cancer Now, and in January 2019, we got that drug approved on the NHS in Scotland. It was amazing, and it just showed me what campaigning with Breast Cancer Now can do. We can affect change, we can make things happen that should be happening. And following on from that, I was involved in the secondary breast cancer campaign, where a group of about 25 people went and met with Breast Cancer Now. We did workshops, we did sessions to find out what were the key things that people with living with secondary breast cancer needed. And things like a secondary breast cancer dedicated nurse came out, you know, top every time. And so that was really effective as well on the outcomes from that. And then, and more recently, working with Hannah and Anna, who have been amazing in supporting the Scottish section. There might be a perception that Breast Cancer Now is a London-based charity. Absolutely not. We have two dedicated people, Hannah and Anna, and others within Scotland, who are working for us and working on behalf of us. And that means the world to us because it makes us feel included, not overlooked, that our voice is important. And I just think campaigning together, patients and Breast Cancer Now, we're going to do this. We're going to get the change. We keep going. Yes, we get knockbacks now and again, but we keep going and keep going, and we will get this. We will be counted. The only time we're counted as patients is when we die. And currently, a third of people who get breast cancer will die from their breast cancer, and they will be counted, but we don't know who is living with it. And so that statistic of a third has not changed in years. We may be diagnosing it earlier. We may be getting better treatments available. But a third of everyone diagnosed with breast cancer will die. They will go on to progress and have secondary breast cancer and die. Now, I've been living with this disease for nearly 4.5 years, which I think is utterly amazing. I'm very, very lucky. I'm very aware of that. And I wonder if that is because I'm so, well, is it because of me, my DNA, the cancer drugs that are available, the people that have come before me who have campaigned to get things like Herceptin available on the NHS? And it keeps going and it keeps going. So, yeah, it's we will keep going together. We will keep this relationship going and we will make change.
Thank you so much for that, Jen. I think you touched on a really important point there, whereas you're not just doing this for yourself, and you acknowledge that, you know, a lot of the treatments that we have now, we only have because of people like yourself mm-hmm. in a similar position to you before you campaigned for these things. And yeah. It really is, you know, a group effort of just everyone pulling together and doing what they can.
Absolutely.
And with that in mind, I want to ask both of you about, you know, actions that people can take, not just those living with secondary, but also, you know, anyone else, if they want to get involved, how can people support not just this policy change, perhaps, but other policy changes in future? How can people use their voices to, you know, make sure that secondary breast cancer patients are getting the best care available?
Yes, I would encourage anybody who wants to campaign, not necessarily in front of the camera, behind the camera, there's lots of work that can be done in conjunction with Breast Cancer Now, who will support you and lead you and help you in your campaign work in whatever capacity that is. So I would encourage anybody to sign up to Breast Cancer Now. You can do that on their socials. You can do that via the website. There is a link to Tell My Story, which is really good. So if you want to tell your story about how secondary breast cancer affected you, or if you want to get involved in a particular piece, there is a form on the website, which I would highly encourage people to use. And just engage with Breast Cancer Now and get there and get behind the campaign.
I completely agree with you. We do, as Jen mentioned, we've done a lot of work speaking to individuals with secondary breast cancer, and it's that qualitative and quantitative insight that really informs our kind of campaigning work. And so whether it's just understanding whether you've had trouble accessing a particular treatment, or hearing about your individual experience of when MDT has particularly worked well for you, or you've not been able to access a secondary breast cancer nurse, that insight is invaluable to kind of give us an evidence base about what we're campaigning for. So as Jen said, sharing experiences is hugely valuable. And then just making sure you're signed up to our relevant newsletters, our various social media accounts, because there'll be an opportunity to kind of signpost you to activity when we're undertaking a range of campaigns, whether that's UK-wide or Scotland-specific or in any of the other nations.
I think the more people we tell, the higher the profile this becomes. And every single person I tell this story to about us, people with living with secondary breast cancer, not being counted, not having our opinions looked at as base of evidence as to what support services are available, they're abhorred. They can't believe why we wouldn't be counted. So get out there on your social media channels, tell people in of influence, and try and push change. But I would strongly suggest that you do a lot of that in conjunction with breast cancer now.
Fantastic point. Yeah. We always hope that people will share our messages, especially if you do have that platform. If you can reach more people, it's such a tiny thing that you can do, but could have such a huge kind of ripple effect.
The only thing I had to add, which is actually building on a point that Jen said, at Breast Cancer Now, we're fully committed to doing a kind of UK-wide activity. So though we've obviously secured the commitment for a secondary breast cancer audit in England and Wales, for us, it's really important to get consistency across the UK to ensure that we're getting insight from across the four nations. Because for us, I think, especially with secondary breast cancer, the patient population is relatively small. So any insight that you can extract, especially because the health and social care contexts are so different, is actually really helpful to identify best practice and really ensure that, as we've mentioned, that every woman and man feels like they're being counted. Because I think, Jen, you articulated it really well, just about the fact that Breast Cancer Now is a UK-wide organisation, and we really do put resources and effort across the board to achieve our kind of campaign objectives.
Absolutely. And I think that's so important. It's so much appreciated, because we are different in Scotland and different across all the four nations.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. Thank you so much both for joining me. Thank you especially, Jen, for giving us your personal insight. And yeah, hopefully we'll have some much more positive news about the audit in the very near future. Thank you very much.
I hope so. And thank you too as well. And thank all of Breast Cancer Now, because without you, we couldn't be doing any of this.
Well, thank you, Jen.
Thank you. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram by searching Breast Cancer Now. We've also included some links in the episode description where you can sign up for policy updates or join our Changemakers Facebook group. If you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the Breast Cancer Now podcast, make sure to subscribe via your preferred podcast provider so that you never miss an episode. Also, if you're able to, we'd love it if you could rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and perhaps recommend us to someone you think would find us helpful. The more people we can reach, the more we can get Breast Cancer Now's vital resources to those who need them.